it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. It's the morning shift. It's 8:04 a.m. Thanks for hanging out with us on a Tuesday morning. It's our brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Going to get the wake-up call here in just a couple of minutes. I think we got full phone lines, 404-726-0929. Bo just gave you his top five list of away venues. We kind of put it out there. I want to hear from you if you have a list of your own coolest sporting event or venue you've ever been to. Would love to hear from you today. And like I said, 404-726-0929. I got another one, too. We've been talking about Younghoe Koo and the quote-unquote kicking tryout that's going to happen in Flowery Branch today. If you want to call in, I want to hear what your emotions are going to be if Younghoe Koo is allowed to miss any more kicks in a Falcons uniform. That's what I want to hear about. If Younghoe Koo is allowed to go into this weekend's game against Minnesota as the kicker and misses another field goal, I want to hear how you're going to feel. Because I know that I have emotions about it. I know we all do. It's been frustrating all the way back to last year, and he was allowed to come in this year as the starting kicker. And yet here we are again having this conversation. So I want to hear from you, 404-726-0929, if you got some thoughts on that. Real quick, we're going to get Chris Lowe coming up in just a little bit. Bo, who has a bigger game this weekend? Georgia heading up to Knoxville or Georgia Tech welcoming
Georgia Tech.
Clemson to the flats?
Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech all day.
Season-defining game for Georgia Tech?
Georgia loses to Tennessee – and you go, no big deal, they'll rebound. They still go 9-3, 10-3 or whatever, and they're probably in the playoff because DC and they're Georgia.
Sure.
Georgia Tech loses. Georgia Tech beats Clemson. They're now 3-0. Seven wins away from the 10 that we said that was realistic. And they're in the driver's seat of the ACC to get into that conference title game. And they now have a win on their schedule that immediately propels them into this team can get to 9 or 10 wins. They're in a playoff conversation.
I agree with you on that front. But when you talk about them, whether or not they win or lose, when you talk about it from Georgia loss aspect in terms of Georgia Tech winning, but I think if you flip it around, it's like Georgia Tech losing that game, you'd just be like, well, they lost to Clemson. You thought they were going to lose. They were underdogs.
But it's a bigger game for Tech if they win, and it's a bigger deal if they lose. Like if Tech loses, there now you're looking at the saying, hey, we got to salvage this and we got to do this and that. You know, Georgia Tech wins, they set themselves up for everything. Georgia loses, you're like, you're Georgia. You're still going to probably – you get a chance to beat Texas at home. You get to go on to Jacksonville to beat – you get a chance to beat Florida. You got all these – this is a really big game for Tech to put themselves in the conversation. Georgia's got plenty of other chances. Tech does not have near as many chances to put them in that conversation to me.
Yeah.
You play a weaker schedule.
That's probably a fair point on that end of the argument. All right, 404-726-0929. I want to hear from you guys. Let's hit this thing. Woo! Full phone lines today. Appreciate you guys listening and weighing in, as always.
Kudos to your topic, Bo.
Thank you. Real quick, a few guys that are, as of yesterday, were still out there kicker-wise. Just to give our people something to
all
think
right,
about.
A little fodder. Okay.
Dustin Hopkins, Greg Zuerlein, Eddie Pinheiro, Michael Bagley. Oh, that's the name I mess up.
You get Pinheiro right.
Greg Joseph, Austin Siebert, Zane Gonzalez, Cade York, and Matt McCrane. Prater was obviously taken off. Krieg is the guy they put out there as well. And then Riley Patterson, he was elevated from the Dolphins practice squad for week one.
We've ridden that ride before. Let's go to the first call. Hey, let's start with Norris over in Jackson, Georgia. Norris, what's going on this morning, bud?
Hey, good morning, brother. How you feeling this morning?
Hey, I'm living the dream.
Amen. Praise God. Listen, I was thinking about the competition they have for Koo over the winter period or the
off season, yeah.
The off season. They brought this guy in, had never kicked an NFL game before, and really had no competition. He didn't have any competition.
Yeah.
He won the position by default.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you.
For this guy.
Yeah,
man, you got to have a kicker that has kicked in the NFL before and have experience kicking. This guy has done it. He's done. He can't kick anything hardly anymore.
All right. I appreciate the phone call, Norris. And I actually agree with that. Like, it wasn't that Koo went out and won this competition. It's that Krieg was never a part of it.
Right.
We all witnessed that at practice. It was like, yeah, Koo's going to be the kicker because the other guy's like 2 of 5 today.
I think that was one of the first things you said when we were out at training camp. You're like, is this kicking competition making you nervous?
Neither one looked good on day one. It was like, eh. Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to our buddy AJ over in Fayetteville. AJ, what's going on this morning? Happy Tuesday.
Hey, happy Tuesday morning, Chef. This- Two things, man. I got a wake-up call for Raheem Morris.
Okay.
If we're talking about a kicking competition after week one, what you call that doing spring training?
Yeah.
And spring camp, summer camp. But also on Bo's list, I have to agree with Bo's list, but one thing that I would add, one venue, would be in Detroit.
Ooh.
That is an intimidating place to play. I've visited there to travel with the Falcons to see there. And, man, it rumbles your insides.
Yeah, that's an absolutely perfect call. Thank you so much for winning. I've
been there.
I'm with him on that.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a great environment.
They are on top of you in that place.
It is, but it's just not a place that I think it's because it's Detroit, really. Would I want to play there in a playoff game?
Yeah.
No, because I think it would be really loud. But the these places I've been, the ones I listed on there, I've had, you know, loud, it's been felt like louder, but it's just been more, just felt bigger.
Boy,
I guess.
Got a,
but Detroit's a good one.
I got a block in the back call on an Eric Weems kickoff return there, and I blamed it on somebody else.
How'd the
sideline, Keith Armstrong's like, who was it? I'm like, I don't know. I'm looking around the sideline, I don't know who it was, Keith. I don't know who it was. It might have been that guy over there.
Not even when they called out 79?
They didn't. That's the thing. They got the number wrong.
Oh.
They called out Anton Smith. They called out Anton Smith on the return as getting a blocking back. And he was like, I don't even touch anybody. And I was like, yeah. And like, I definitely saw the laundry at my feet. And I was like, I don't know who it was. Keith's like, man, y'all like working in a prison, man. Ain't nobody ever guilty up in here.
Hey, how did film study go?
Unfortunately, I wasn't part of it because I got injured later in the game,
oh,
and I was not
bad.
Part of it. Yeah, no, it's all good. I got injured on a field goal in that game. Yeah, I got injured the double pushers. Yeah, the Ndamukong Suh, the field goal attempt. Unfortunate. Anyways, let's not get too off topic. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Gary over in Calhoun. Gary, happy Tuesday, man.
How's it going, guys?
Living the dream.
Hey, I believe you. Hey, I'm going to agree with Bo on that New Orleans thing about how tough it is a place to play.
Mm-hmm.
But for us old-timer Falcons fans, it holds a special place in history, though. In 1978, the Big Ben Wright play.
Tell us about it.
But, you know, that's just my take on it. But it does hold us. It has some bad memories, but it also has some good ones.
Wait. Tell me about the play, because obviously I was not alive in 1978. Tell me, Gary. Tell me what happened in
1978. Saints take the lead late in the game. We got less than 30 seconds on the clock. We're on about our own 30-yard line. Gotta have a touchdown. All right. Steve Bartkowski is a quarterback.
Right.
You have Wallace Francis, Alfred Jenkins, and Alfred Jackson are your wide receivers. So Jenkins and Francis take off down the sideline, and Jackson's going up the hash.
Okay.
So Bartkowski heaves it, and it was about at the New Orleans 30, 25-yard line. You know, the New Orleans defensive backs are back there expecting the long bomb.
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyway, they all jump up in the air. The ball is tipped, and Alfred Jackson's purposely trailing the play because he's going to sneak back in behind him and catch the ball and run for a touchdown, and that's exactly what happened. Look it up on YouTube. It's on YouTube.
The ball is batted up at the 15.
Sounds like the Bluegrass Miracle.
And he's right. He he just kind of trails in and just catches it off of Karam and walks into the end zone.
Now, did you just look it up?
Yeah, I've seen it before, though. I've seen it before, but I did not have near the recall in it because I also was not born in 1978.
I was going to say I wasn't alive then, but Bo might have been. Hey, let's try to sneak one more in. Let's go to Jay in Stockbridge. Jay, what's going on this morning?
Oh, guys, good morning.
Hey, man. Hey, cut it. Jay, we'll try to get you back on the line, man. We're losing a little reception. Hey, Dylan, let's go to Sam over in Marietta. Sam, what's going on, boss?
Good morning, hey, Chef. How y'all doing? Happy Tuesday.
Hey, man,
I wanted to first shout out the last caller. I was born in 1990, and that was like a great visual of him, like, remembering.
Right?
I said the same
It was
thing.
So great. I was like, oh, this is so cool. It's taking me there.
Yeah, I agree.
But, I've been to Foxborough. The stadium was great, but I ended up getting into a fight and having to leave. The fans were definitely terrible. That was like after the Super Bowl. I thought we were going to, go get our face back. But outside, the food, people were, giving me food. That was great. I also been to Arrowhead, and I did not know their baseball stadium is literally across, like literally in the same parking lot. And I thought that was so dope. I've gone to Carolina. Their stadium is cool. I really hate to say this, but Tampa Bay, their stadium is slick, nice, and when they score, they blow those cannons. And though I think that's one of the coolest things ever.
Yeah, I agree with
this
that,
year
man.
Would be my first time going to New Orleans, so ooh. I'm excited about that. I'm gonna do. Hopefully, I'm doing the Hawks and the Falcons, but I need to survive for Sunday, so I may just crank the Sunday game.
Hey Sam, don't get any fights down there, man. You know what I mean? Don't get any fights down in New Orleans.
So,
Let's keep all our hands to ourselves.
Baltimore does that.
Yeah.
Philadelphia does that as well, where their stadiums are in the same parking lot.
Yep.
And he's right about Tampa Bay. That's why Gene Deckerhoff on the Tampa Bay call goes, "Fire those cannons," when they score. It's kind of fun.
I'm trying to think. I don't know. I can't remember where it used to be. Enron. What's the Houston stadium called now? The baseball stadium. I don't know. But isn't the Astrodome still next to
NRG
Stadium?
It is next to. In fact, when we...
That's a creepy looking joint.
When we pulled up,
Astrodome is dilapidated.
Yeah. When we pulled up, well, they still have events there.
I don't think they do now.
Yeah,
but I know
they
did back when I went like 5-10 years ago.
I'm pretty sure they still do. Maybe I'm wrong, but when we pulled up, when we pulled up for the Super Bowl, got off and I looked right over and there it was. I was like, man.
By the way,
ding.
The Astros Park is now called Daikin Park.
Dude, I can't keep up. I thought it was Enron running.
That was Tampa Bay. Minute Maid?
I've been to that stadium before. It was Tropicana.
Steinbrenner Field is actually across the street from Tampa Bay, Tampa's, which is a AAA stadium.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, it's a spring training stadium, but that's where Tampa's playing this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not supposed to count, but it does right now. Anyway.
Well, what is the coolest venue you have been to? What stadium that you've been to? We are continuing this conversation on Twitter at 929 Morning Shift. Coming up, though, we'll get some more insights from Mike and Bo on what they've been seeing in that Falcons game since reviewing the film. And we've got them mic'd up.
Yeah, we got them mic'd up. Speaking of keeping your hands to yourself, Sam, I'm going to continue to talk about this fallout from Lamar Jackson, whether he was right or wrong. That's coming up next.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the Morning Shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan. We're going to get to mic'd up in a moment. I'm kind of amazed because you spoke something into existence.
Uh-oh. What happened?
Well, it's your mic'd up.
I know.
It's your mic'd up. I'll save that for you.
I think I was just piggybacking, but yeah, you're right.
And we are going to get some more insights from Mike and Bo. But guys, the internet is undefeated when it comes to identifying people. Until the internet has met Philly's Karen. Nobody knows who she is. Have you seen the video?
She's still in hiding?
She's still in hiding.
Well, no, I thought they found her.
Nope.
She wasn't
a false person. And like she's had to come out and say, like, hey, that woman is much thinner than me. I wish I looked like that. Like, that is not me. And she has caught in some flack, but they cannot find her.
I hope they find her. She deserves all of... Look. Let me... All right, hold on. Let me take that back a little bit. She just deserves to be outed a little bit about, like, you were despicable. And she wasn't just despicable to that little kid and that father. By the way, that dad should have let his testicular fortitude hang down and maybe say, nah.
That's a tough spot, I will say.
You ain't taking anything from my kid.
Okay, that's a tough spot, though, because do you want to act a fool in front of your kid and get arrested or get in a fight? I'm just saying in general. I've had situations happen around my kid where I have to back down and be like, I'm not going to act a fool in front of my kid.
I would just say, hey, you need to step off me and my family. Like, I don't...
If she doesn't?
Well, then I call security. Okay. She's not getting the baseball. Like, you're not getting the baseball. I'm sorry. You ain't getting it.
So he did an interview, and he talked about he just wanted to de-escalate the situation.
Which I understand.
That's exactly right. That's why I have his back on that. He's catching strays, and I'm like, it's a tough situation. It's a split-second decision. And I wish he would have kept the baseball, too, just to be clear. But
you
don't want to act a fool in front of your kid. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough spot to be in. So
it worked out well for them. The Phillies really took care of them a lot. I give Philly – you know what's crazy? First off, give Philly a lot of credit, the organization, for doing that. The Marlins as well.
Yeah.
Because their stadium people did a phenomenal job as well. So both organizations – but did you see how many Philly fans were in that section? Like, Philly fans were fighting with Philly fans. Like, she was a Philly fan. They were Philly fans. She fought with another Philly fan. And then another guy above them in an Eagles jersey screamed at her.
That's how you know you're in the wrong. When you are a Philly and other Philly fans are coming at you, that's when you know you've done something wrong.
What is
that? That's when you know you've done something wrong. Like, that's unprecedented.
I don't want to go down, like, and make this whole thing, but... What has happened or has not happened in your life where this is a be-all, end-all escalation, going to fight somebody for
a kid?
A whole, yeah.
You were just saying, like, you ain't going to take no ball away from my kid. That's how she felt in that moment. She's dumb.
But it wasn't her kid. Like,
Either way.
She didn't have a kid. It was her. She wanted the ball.
But she saw a grown man come get it. I mean, maybe she realized it was going to a kid. Maybe she... I'm not defending
her. The kid's holding it. She's in the kid's face. Like,
I'm talking about the one that was by her.
It was by her. The dad
comes over
and gets
it. She wanted the ball for another kid.
No, she didn't. There was no kid over there. It was her and her husband.
Yeah, you got to go watch it.
No, I didn't see no kid.
Yeah.
I didn't see no damn kid.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, like, you were just talking about you ain't taking a ball with my kid. Like, I think that's exactly what she was saying.
I think Amy...
I hope the worst for that situation as far as punishment goes, but...
Do you think Lindsay would have punched her?
Oh, man.
Maybe.
Maybe. Because I used to think Amy wouldn't, but now I think she might.
Yeah, maybe.
As a mom. I'm not talking about person, just the mom instinct.
Well, I guarantee we will see Philly's Karen as a Halloween costume this year.
That's coming, which is probably going to be pretty funny. I'm not going to lie to you.
She should just wear that outfit on her own and be like, no, I just dress it up like it's not me.
Will we get to see Buffalo Bills pusher fan? That's the next question. Mic'd Up brought to you by Buffalo's Cafe. Come wing it family style at one of Buffalo's Cafe's 13 Atlanta locations. A couple things to get to. First and foremost, the Jalen Carter punishment is due to come out today. When I say I have no idea what to expect, I have no clue what to expect.
Speculation is it'll be a fine because it didn't come out yesterday. I tend to disagree. I think it could still be a suspension because of the fact that they were probably just waiting to do everything in one fell swoop with fines and suspensions and stuff for the whole week.
I would say a suspension is warranted. It's just as unfortunate as it could possibly be. And, you know, you saw a situation that actually, I think the suspension was handed out yesterday, an MLS player from Miami spit on a coach or a personnel person from another team.
Goodness.
Three-game suspension.
Goodness.
Three-game suspension. So I don't know how they're going to handle this, but I'll be curious to see how it happens. Speaking of suspensions, if you didn't see it on Sunday night, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but Lamar Jackson had an interaction with a fan after DeAndre Hopkins' touchdown. If you didn't see it, basically the fan kind of, I called it mugging Lamar Jackson, DeAndre Hopkins. This is what Lamar Jackson had to say after the game.
You know, I seen him slap D-Hop, which you know, I wasn't good. He slapped me, and he's saying, he's talking. So, you know, I just forgot where I was for a little bit, you know. But, you know, you gotta think in those situations, you know. You got security out there. Let security handle it, you know. But I just let my emotion get the best of me. But hopefully it don't happen again. I learned from that.
Now, I got a couple thoughts here. First of all, you heard him say, hey, we got security out there. Should have let my emotions get the best of me. Should have let security handle it. Bo and I kind of talked about this a little bit yesterday. I do want to tell everybody that the fan who shoved Lamar Jackson and DeAndre Hopkins was ejected from the game. Sounds like he's going to be banned from the stadium as well. So that's a good outcome.
Okay.
Right? That's a good outcome. I think we can all agree on that. I got to tell you, though, after listening back to Lamar Jackson's sound and him being like, my emotions got the best of me, I was like, nah, man, I think you handled it just fine. And this was the interaction that Bo and I had yesterday. I didn't realize at the time that he also got mugged in the head. Like, I thought it was him retaliating after what happened to DeAndre Hopkins. I didn't realize he was also kind of slapped against the head. And to me, if you're going to lay hands on me, period, I get to lay my hands on you, period. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's not what the league wants. I know Lamar is being, you know, trying to be smart about what he says and the way he goes about his business. But I'm just telling you, you put your hands on my head and do any type of physical contact, you're going to get two hands to the chest. And I don't blame Lamar one bit for the way he reacted in that moment.
Yes, I agree with what you're saying. But I will say this. The reason why Lamar is right about he has to be, you know, not allow his emotions to get the better of him is because as the player, you've got way more to lose than the fan. That's the way I feel. I worry about these situations, the world we live in now where you can, and whether right or wrong, but you can sue anybody for anything and you never know how that's going to, you get the wrong judge or the wrong jury or just whatever it is.
Right,
and you're the one losing everything. And yeah. That person, you know, it's kind of like on the social media if you're in this public spotlight, you have more to lose with a negative interaction than the random person that you're interacting with. You have to remember that.
Yeah.
But I understand where Lamar is coming from, and I'm not sitting here throwing fault on him.
Yeah.
I just don't like these situations because the players are always the ones with something to lose.
Yeah, and, you know, this not getting touched, but the back and forth between athlete and fan happens more, I think, in the NBA because of the close proximity. And I know that there was some, you know, the Florios of the world are like, well, don't get that close to the fan. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. It's not going to happen in the NFL.
Right.
Like, I shouldn't have to not be able to walk with my feet on the turf. It's not like they did the Lambeau leap. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just one of those things. But, you know, I appreciate all the back and forth. And I just, man, I listened to Lamar and I was like, dude, you don't have to apologize for that. I think we'd all done the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? It is what it is. But he's going to try to be smart.
Definitely a touchy situation.
Exactly.
Well, coming up, we've got On Three senior college football reporter Chris Lowe joining us. That is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's the morning shift. Welcome back in. Thanks so much for hanging out with us here on this Tuesday morning. Mike Johnson, Ali Mack, Squidbilly, Dylon, hanging out with you guys, talking all things NFL, Atlanta Falcons, Younghoe Koo, and also college football. Got a bunch of matchups coming up this weekend, and that's why we go straight to the phone lines and welcome in On Three senior college football reporter Chris Lowe. Chris, I was making the joke earlier that nobody, not even my wife, has seen me. I've seen my chin because I've had a beard for so long. You might actually be one of those people. I think I met you like 18 or 19 years ago. You might have been one of the only people that's actually seen my chin in this conversation, man. What's going on?
It's good to be with you guys. Yeah, it's 18 years ago for me, somebody my age. That was just like 2 days ago.
Look, Chris, you've been around. You've done it a long time, man. We always appreciate your stuff. And we were having a conversation earlier about the toughest places to play in the NFL. The Falcons are heading on the road to the Minnesota Vikings. I don't want to know about the toughest home environments. We've had that conversation back and forth in terms of the SEC. What's your favorite SEC stadium to work at, man? Who's got the good buffet line up there in the press box?
You know, they're not as good as they used to be.
Don't tell me that.
Oh yeah, I remember when I was just starting out in the business, and Mr. Bob Bradley was the SID at Clemson. You went to Clemson on a Saturday for a game circa 88, 89. It was like you were going to one of those sort of mom-and-pops country cooking restaurants out in the middle of nowhere, and you had green beans and macaroni and cheese and pinto beans, and you had chicken, baked chicken, fried chicken. It was as good as it got. And I remember way back at Notre Dame would have ribs and barbecue chicken in the press box. So it's unfortunately, those days are long gone. But, yeah, everybody had a pretty good spread. Auburn had a great spread. South Carolina had a great spread. You were hard-pressed if you went anywhere in the SEC, late 80s, early 90s, all the way up into the mid to late 90s, where they didn't feed you pretty well.
And Chris, I'm starving.
Yeah, I'm going to have to stop you because we've been talking about how hungry we are in the studio. but it's already been an interesting college football season. What's been the biggest surprise to you through week one and two?
Well, the first week it was Alabama just getting beat up the way they did by Florida State. I know there was a lot of, and there still is a lot of trepidation there because they've got Georgia coming up in a couple weeks, and that's going to be the telltale game. But you know, the fact that they lost was surprising, I guess, to lose to Florida State. But to lose by two touchdowns and just physically getting beat up, I didn't see that coming. I really didn't. I'd been to practice. I had been around that program a good bit in the preseason. And to see them go out there and just look like a team that at times was going through the motions, that was pretty shocking. I would say, you know, around the country, I wasn't surprised because I knew how good he was. But John Mechir is going to give or has given Oklahoma a completely different dynamic. His ability to run the football, he's a guy that just makes plays. They've been missing that on offense the last few years under Brent Venables. Well, he gives them that dimension now. And they're always going to play really good defense with Brent Venables there. I think the third thing would be Clemson. Clemson just has looked – I thought Clemson would be easily a top-five team, easily a shoe-in to be in the playoff. They haven't looked anything like it. They've been bad on offense. Kay Klubnik has been, you know, just a shadow of what he was last year. They haven't been able really to run the football. So I think out of the gate, those would be the three things. The fourth thing would probably be – and again, I want to temper it. We're bad in the media and among fans to overreact a week or two in the season. But boy, LSU looks like under Brian Kelly, they have the best defense they've had under him. They've got guys who can rush the passer. Harold Perkins is healthy, and they've got some really good players on the back end. So that defense looks to be what LSU fans are used to LSU looking like on defense when they've been at their best.
Well, Chris, let's talk about a surprise. Not a surprise. We were picking it, and I kind of said I thought Mississippi State had a chance to cover, but they flat out beat Arizona State. I know it was in Starkville, but you know Blake Shapen plays a pretty good game. What has Jeff Lebby got going on down there that they can upset a team that won the Big 12 last year and was a playoff team?
I was with Jeff in that program for a whole day back in the Thursday before game week, and spent some time in Starkville and spent some time with Jeff and the team. You know, talk to Blake Shapen, talk to Brennan Thompson. There was a lot of optimism that they were going to be better. You know, Jeff brought in 65 new players. You know, Shapen was healthy. Brennan Thompson, they felt like, was really going to add to their ability to make explosive plays. And you saw that the other night against Arizona State. Just an awesome environment. I wasn't there. I watched it on television. Wish I would have been there because when you're in Davis Wade Stadium, those cowbells are clanging and the next place is rocking the way it was. I've always thought it's as underrated a place to play if you're the opposing team as there is anywhere in the country. It's loud. The noise stairs are right on top of you. It is just a really, again, unless you're the opposing team, it's a great place to to be on a Saturday night. But no, I mean, Levy has worked hard to bring in, guys that can help him in the transfer portal. He feels like he's put together two pretty good high school classes. They still need another, at least one more, maybe two more. But they are a program I felt like would be improved. I'm like you guys, I didn't see them beating Arizona State. But it wasn't fluky. I mean, they made big plays. They got up early, and then when Arizona State turned the momentum of that game, let's give Mississippi State credit. They didn't panic. They came right back and made the play they had to win their biggest game in years. I'm going to tell you what, guys, that's a program that had been reeling ever since Mike Leach died. And there's been a lot of heartache, just a lot of bad days, gloomy days. You know, they go 2-10 last year. They fire Zach Arnett before his first season's even over. And then Saturday night was, I know, had to be therapeutic for that entire Mississippi State community, the fans, and that entire university.
Hanging out with Chris Lowe here on the Morning Shift, the On3 senior college football reporter. Chris, you were talking about some of the surprises you've had. I want to talk about Florida for a minute. Their loss to South Florida this past weekend. What does Billy Napier need to do to be able to stay in his role as Florida head coach between now and the end of the season?
I thought what Billy did last year was almost Houdini-like, the way they started. You know, I was there for their game against Texas A&M. I guess that was the second or third week, and they looked like a team that was just hanging by a thread. I felt like Billy, probably his coaching career was hanging by a thread. And to his credit, you know, he never lost that football team. And they played a lot of good football down the stretch. This game last Saturday, to me, was even worse. Because not only did they lose and look anemic on offense, but they lost to South Florida. And in that state, if you're Florida, you should never lose to South Florida. And that has nothing to do with what Alex Gullish has done in South Florida. He's done a tremendous job. But you can't lose a game like that when you've been there as long as Billy has at home. I said this last year, I'll say it again. He's going to have, it was a Houdini type deal last year. It's probably going to take a miracle for him to survive this year. Look at their schedule, guys, the rest of the way. They're at LSU. They're at Miami. They're home against Texas. They're at Texas A&M. That's the next four games. Now, they do get a bye between Miami and Texas. That's the next four games. And then they got to play Mississippi State. They get a bye. And then Georgia, at Kentucky, at Ole Miss, Tennessee at home, Florida State at home. And you show me in that schedule whether they're going to be a 9 or even an 8-win team based on what we've seen to this point. I don't think people say, oh, let's get rid of them now. I've heard from Florida fans. I don't think you can do that. Because you just completely crater your season. Kids start shutting it down. Players start shutting down. Your roster gets raided as far as transfers. So they owe it to those players and that team to try to make it through at least the next month, month and a half, if you're going to do it. But I don't see it. I think they're to the point there, the people that matter at Florida, where they're going to move on.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be tough. Another fan base, Chris, that I think is frustrated is Georgia. They're frustrated with the slow start against Austin Peay, I should say, last weekend. Now, they've got Tennessee coming up. Not as easy of a game, but Tennessee is without two corners. How big of a deal is that?
Well, the good news for Tennessee is they played two kids who played pretty well. They got Colton Hood, transfer portal from Colorado, and he's been one of their best players in their first couple of games. They've got a freshman at the other corner who's played really well, but he's a freshman. You know, he's not seen, he hasn't gone up against a Noah Thomas or Zachariah Branch or some athletes Georgia has. So that's a tough assignment. So while they miss Jamon McCoy, they're going to miss Gibson. Those kids have played a lot of football and play at a high level. They've at least got some guys who've been tested in the first two games. See, I think the bigger matchup in this game is which offensive line plays the best. Who could protect? Can Georgia protect Gunner? You know, can Georgia play well enough in the run game that they can at least keep Tennessee's defense honest? And the same for Tennessee. Can they protect Joey Aguilar? They've been able to do that in the first couple of games. He's run around and made some plays. But they haven't faced a defensive front the way they are against Georgia. And I know some people say, well, it always sort of gets down to the offensive line. Yeah, it does to some degree. But I bet you in this game, when this game's over, we're all going to look at it and say, well, Georgia won or Tennessee won because they played better in the offensive line. I think that's what it gets down to. Listen, Georgia fans are always upset when they don't score 50 points and have 500 yards in those first couple games. You know, it's the offensive coordinator. Well, they didn't do this. They should have done more of that. I think this is not the first time we've heard that. You'll see a different Georgia offense. They're going to do some more things. They'll have to do some more things. And I know the lack of explosive plays in the pass game is something that's been unnerving for Georgia fans. But you know, Kirby said the other day, and he's right, it's sort of the way the teams were playing them. They just said, okay, you can have all the underneath stuff you want. We're not going to let you get behind us. Well, if you do that, if you continue to do that, then Georgia, I think, is going to be able to run the football and take advantage. They don't have that guy who's the automatic first down the way Brock Bowers was. I think we all know that. And that takes away from any offense. But I still think you're going to see Georgia do some different things and look a little bit different on offense against a really good Tennessee defense. Tennessee's legit up front. Their front seven is really good. This will be, I think, because Georgia's handled Tennessee pretty well since Josh Heupel's been there. That's sort of the next test for Heupel. You know, he's beaten Florida twice. He's beaten Alabama twice. He hasn't been able to beat Georgia. And that game a few years ago when it was 1-2 was hyped, but Georgia pretty much dominated that football game physically. I think this probably will be the best and most closely contested game these two teams have played since Heupel arrived in Knoxville in 21.
That's Chris Lowe, On Three Reporter. Chris, got a lot of stuff to digest this coming weekend, man, but I appreciate you hanging out with us.
You bet. Thanks for having me, guys.
There you go, man. Good stuff.
Of Big course. Weekend. Yes, you can find Chris Lowe on Twitter or X at CLOWFB. Hey, and this Saturday from noon until 2, you can join me, Allie Mack, at Lusab Kia in Noonan. As we get ready for Sunday's big game, someone's going to walk away with the ultimate tailgate kit. We're talking a 50-inch 4K smart TV, a rolling stand that goes with it, a Yeti cooler, and another winner is going to take home tickets to an upcoming home game. That's going to be the Atlanta-Washington game. Again, that is Saturday, noon to 2 at Lusab Kia in Noonan with me. And this hour has been brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. That's going to do it for us. For Mike, Bo, Dylan, and myself, Allie Mack, thanks for being here today. Sandra Golden returns on the Steakhouse. I have laid eyes on her. It is coming up next on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. And don't forget to
stay cool, Atlanta.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.